Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining Dr. Perletta Ramos and Roz Shell in Living Life Powerfully. We help you turn the ordinary into the extraordinary by claiming your power, getting your heart in the game, and learning how to live from the inside out. Let's create more happiness and success in your life.
Hello there. Welcome to Living Life Powerfully. My name is Perletta, and I'm here with Raj. And today we're exploring what it means to live a religious or spiritually filled life. Now, most specifically, we're going to also talk about what does it mean to live in the world and not be of this world. I've been fascinated with that concept for a long time, to live in the world and not be of this world. Now, if you're a Christian, you've probably heard that phrase at some point or another in your life. But the reality is you may not be a Christian. You may not have heard of that phrase. So we're going to get into the depth of what that means. Please feel free to join us on this discussion by calling 347-215-7827. So I mentioned if you're not a Christian, you may not have heard the phrase, but we recognize also that there might be people who are agnostic or who are atheists who are listening in. So there's some people who don't know whether there is a supreme being, and some people who specifically don't believe that there is one. And yet we believe that you still can live a spiritually based life, whether you believe in a quote-unquote higher power or not. What are your thoughts about that, Raj?
Oh, I think that many of us believe many different ways. In fact, I think there are as many religions as there are people on Earth. So, yeah, and wherever you are, it is where you are. You know, there's no judgment there. And I think today's show is a testament to that, because we're just opening up a way for you to, you know, look at how it is to be in the world and not be of the world. And I think that, you know, I mean, I'm really excited about this conversation, Perletta.
So there's a way in which we're talking about living a spiritual life, and you don't have to be a Christian to live a spiritually filled life. What we're talking about is walking a spiritual path, and what does that mean? And that means that we recognize that there are challenges to how we live in the world, right? The work that we do can be stressful, paying your bills, raising kids, striving for success. Many of us strive to be happy in the physical world, and yet there are all of these other temptations that are out there that can sometimes keep us from maintaining a state of peacefulness, right? So, and those states we're talking about can be emotional states, like you can become angry. I got really angry this past weekend because in part I was stressed out. Greed. There are a host of other frustrations as well. Jealousy, a number of emotions that can keep us from being peaceful at any given moment. And how do you maintain the sense of well-being during those times? That's a part of what we're talking about. And what we know is it's really hard sometimes to live in a peaceful existence and not succumb to our frustrations, not succumb to the anger, which is why we're talking about this today. It's the importance of following whatever internal guide that you have for your own growth and development in light of what's happening in the world, right? Because each of us are walking a path. It's to some degree whether we're consciously aware of the path that we're walking. Sometimes we find ourselves on one path. We're like, where am I going? You know, like, and that just means that we may not be aware to the degree that we could be of the path that we're on and the way that we're living and whether it's helping us to achieve our greatest goal, whatever that may be.
Yeah, well, there are three new studies that have been published in online in Cancer. It's a peer-reviewed journal of the American Cancer Society. And I believe that it sheds some light on how faith can impact cancer patients' mental, social, and physical well-being. Well, in the first study, it revealed that the patients who report greater overall religiousness and spirituality also report better physical health, the greater ability to perform their usual tasks, and fewer physical symptoms of cancer and its treatment. And the second study found that the emotional aspects were also more strongly associated with positive mental health than behavioral or cognitive aspects of religion and spirituality. And spiritual well-being was associated with less anxiety, depression, or distress. And then the third study looked at the patient's ability to retain social roles and relationships in the face of a dire illness. But in this case, the religion and spirituality had modest but reliable links with social health. So make it mean whatever you want. You know, like I always believe that studies are, you know, sometimes limited. I don't know exactly how this was done. My personal belief is that each of us, whether we want to identify with a particular religion or, you know, wherever you are, if you think you're just spiritual, you still have a personal relationship with our universe, with yourself, with others. And it's in that relationship, in that connectedness that we find meaning and purpose.
Mm. So what really talking about is how can religion or spirituality be helpful in our daily lives? And the real simple answer is that it's helpful because it helps you to cope. It helps you to build resilience. And the research is clear on that, both from a physical standpoint, but also from an emotional and mental standpoint. Like there's a physiological aspect of having faith and being able to cope in a way that serves you, that you're able to grow from whatever challenges that might happen in your life, some of which I mentioned earlier, just the challenges of living in a modern society. So there are many religions in the world. Rod said there are innumerable number, and there probably are, but the most common ones include Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism. There are a host of others. I think you may know that most people in the United States consider themselves Christians, which is why I mentioned Christianity in the beginning. And there are different types of Christians, you know, Catholics and Pentecostals, Methodists, Baptists, whatever your particular faith is. It doesn't really matter in terms of our conversation. What the most important aspects of your belief system, whether it's based in a religious philosophy or your spiritual practice, is that you have a shared faith, and there's a way that you practice that faith in your life. And it also helps to bring people closer together in fellowship. That's a part of why people go to church or to the synagogue or to the temple. If they're going to fellowship with other like-minded individuals, so it brings a connection. Not only that, but there are typical customs that people follow when they're a part of the same community. And that helps you to, you stand up here, you sing here, you may kneel and pray here. That, again, helps people to feel a sense of belonging and connection. So there's the religious aspect of it, but there's also a very deep, significant social piece of it. And then also, faith offers people, I think, a deeper inward, like Raj has talked about, connection to something higher than yourself, something that's deeper than what you may feel your personal capacity is to overcome. I was on the street the other day, and actually a guy was walking to church down the street from my parents' house, and he said, "Oh, I hope the walls don't come tumbling down." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because I haven't stepped foot in the church in many years, you know." And I was sitting there, and as he came out, because I was sitting there with my mom, so we sat there for over an hour, and he walked up the street and he said, "You know, I haven't been to church because I've been struggling, you know, in this place called life." And then he went into a story about having been in jail and a whole host of things that had happened. And so what I was reminded of is that people go really for encouragement. A lot of people go to church for encouragement. They find solace there. They may find direction and insight to something that helps them to get beyond the limitation that they may feel in their own daily experience. They find courage. There's so many examples in whatever text that's studied in church, and examples of how you can overcome your circumstances. And in that way, it provides hope for people. And again, I can't minimize this notion that this connection to something greater than yourself can be a source of inspiration that can help motivate you in times when you may not feel personally motivated to, or may be able to see the end of the light at the end of the tunnel to get past your current circumstance. So all of those things can be helpful in our daily lives to transcend being in the world and the circumstances of the world and the limitations of the world.
Mm.
So go ahead, Ross. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, like my, okay, so I was born in the Sikh faith. It's from India, the northern part of India. It's spelled S-I-K-H. It doesn't mean I'm sick, like physically sick. So the Sikh faith, I was born into it. I was never pressured, though. I was never pressured to follow it. Neither one of my parents is like, you know, like Orthodox, or, you know, they've always, you know, encouraged it. They practice it themselves, but they've never forced us to do it. But I do know that my faith and my religion has been a big support to me. It provides me with answers that sometimes I cannot get from anywhere else. And yet, you know, again, I'm not real Orthodox either. However, my faith and, you know, I have a high regard, and it is such a part of my life. But, you know, there's a saying, Shannon Adler says, your religion is not what you do on Sunday. It is how you live Monday through Saturday. So I think, As a human being, I think I am more focused on the Monday through the Saturday, and it's not really important to me where we go to check in on Sunday. So, you know, I consider. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you bring up a very important point. I know I was raised as a Baptist and Pentecostal. My mother went to a number of different places, Jehovah's Witnesses, and I was so turned off of Christianity at a young age. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of people get turned off because of what you just talked about. There's sometimes a belief that there's some hypocrisy there. You know, it's like I can act crazy and live my life in a way that's not growth-oriented and then, you know, just call on the name of Jesus and then somehow be saved at the end of the day. Like, you know, before I close my eyes, you know, I call on the name and I'm forgiven. And that never sat well with me. And in conversations, sometimes people get so protective over their faith that they're unwilling to away from the idea that they're right and another person is wrong. And that turns a lot of people off. I know it turns me off. It took me a while to find that a way of living and being that I could, that felt empowering for me and did not feel like I was being controlled by this philosophy. Now, whatever the religion was. But so everyone has to find their own way. That's the most important thing of what we're talking about. But this notion of spirituality that I think you and I probably are on the same page with, Raj, it's really how you live your life every day, including Sunday. It's not, you know, a thing that you go to on one day of the week, because some folks go to, you know, church on different days or go to the temple or whatever. But it's more, What is your belief system? How does it guide you? How does it help you to find peace when you're having difficulty? You know, how did, like when the gentleman was walking up the street and he was like, you know, I was in jail and I did this and I went through a really hard time. And, you know, he's looking for a place of solace. Wherever you find that, if you find it in church, but you can also find it in your living room or you can find it in a park, right? Because it's not in a place, it's within you. And that's really the crux of a spiritual journey. It's recognizing that wherever you are, there is the possibility for you to grow and transcend from that and find peace exactly where you are. So this idea of what does it mean to be... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, Perletta, you know, one of the premises of the Sikh faith is that there's only one God, okay? So one higher source, that we all are just on a path to the same source, and that we are all one, and that we are to respect each other. And I think that part is so important for me. We are all one. We are all connected. We're all, you know, we've got all got the same blood running through each other. It's not different. We all feel pain the same way. We all are connected. So to me, it's all about connection. And if we are feeling disconnected, why is that? If something is not supportive to us, if our universe is not supportive to us, if others are not supportive to us, what is it about that you know, that has you isolate yourself or think that you're better than somebody else, or, you know, however you are being in the world? I think that's what you're alluding to, is wherever you are, whatever you're experiencing, you know, can you have something? Can you have your faith, or how you feel connected to the world, to yourself? Can you use that to move forward? If you're feeling stuck, can you use that to move forward?
So on the eve of his crucifixion, the Bible says that Jesus Christ prayed to his Father, and this is in John chapter 17, quote, "I have given them your word, and the word has hated them, because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world." And I love that. So I've been fascinated with this concept of being in the world and not of it, because it seems to hit me everywhere. You know, sometimes when you work in a work environment that's stressful, and you may not be stressed yourself, but you go, you know, you leave the comforts of your home and family, and then you go into this environment where there's chaos, right? So that's, I'm in the world, but I'm not of the world. How do you go into that and not take on the characteristics of the world is really what it means to live in the world and not be of the world. How do you do that personally every day? I think it's one of the most difficult things to do, because we live in a world that's full of cultural norms that are stress-based, right? Even the notion of success, you know, it's like this constant striving for something, constant longing, working towards, never feeling satisfied, because once we get to a place, there's always some other place. You know, I listened to the Republican potential nominee debate so ago, and, you know, a part of it is quite healthy, because we need to be in certainly a discourse about where the country is going. But the basis of the conversation was everything's broken, it needs to be fixed. It was actually quite stressful listening to it from that, you know, the economy's broken, our foreign policy is broken, we got immigration issues that's broken. Like, that whole conversation is a stressful conversation. When you look at several of the presidents, for example, they like all turn gray if they've been there 8 years. I don't know if you've noticed that. Like they turn gray really quickly. Because it's fascinating to watch, because it's incredibly stressful. So when we're all engaging in our own version of that, how do we live in this world that has a myriad of expectations, right? And as I mentioned earlier, emotions, you know, fear, anxiety, hatred, frustration, and not become of this world and of the environment that we're in. How do you do that?
You know, I'm reminded of the lotus flower, which throughout many cultures it's been a powerful image and a spiritual symbol. In Hinduism, Buddhism, and the Egyptian religions, the lotus is considered a sacred flower. And it's the bud of the lotus symbolizes potential, specifically, you know, of a spiritual nature. Because when you look at the lotus, it rises from unclean, murky, muddy water, and it blossoms as a pure, uncontaminated flower. It is a symbol of purity and resurrection. And so in the same way that the lotus flower goes through much in its growth before emerging from the dirty water to become this flower, we are the same way. The individual consciousness does the same on its path to enlightenment. because the so-called impurities of the unenlightened thinking gradually fades. So for me, this is what it means to be in the world and not of it. Like, we are going to have that murky, muddy, you know, nasty stuff that we have to grow, you know, that's going to be all around us, that we're going to be growing up with. But we are not that. We are potential, just like in the bud of the lotus flower. Our potential is way beyond that, and it has nothing to do with the murky water. So I think what you just talked about, Jesus's quote and this lotus flower, I mean, it's saying the same thing, that we are not of the world.
And it's a wonderful idea, but realizing it when, like I said, our cultural and social structures are set up and the conversations are set up around being in the world, that's why it's so important to become conscious. I mean, I think one of the greatest things that many of us struggle with is the notion of materialism, right? That this quest for more stuff. We spend most of our lifetimes working, thinking about working, feeling like we should be working, you know, harder, smarter, differently for ourselves, become, you know, the CEOs or whatever, just so that we can earn enough money to live life a certain way. And there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, we need to live in the world. We're not talking about that. But I think finding that balance so that we don't become obsessed with it and we lose that, right? Because many of us, no matter how much we have, we never feel like there's enough because we're focused in the world. That's where we put our focus and time and attention over and over, and we give so little time and attention to our inner world. And we don't do that sometimes until either we retire or we don't do that because we don't feel like we have the time because we prioritize living in the world and having the things that sometimes we feel like we need to have in order to be successful or to feel good about our circumstances. However, there's another way to be, right? And the question is, how do we do that? Well, I think a part of it, and we've alluded to it earlier, is to allow your faith to guide you, to go within, first of all, right? And to check in with yourself about your own experience. And, you know, sometimes we're not aware that we're stressed, but when we are aware, we have a capacity to not necessarily be guided from the focus without, but to turn our attention to our own set of values and to allow our own thoughts and feelings and desires to guide our own actions. So sometimes that we recognize we need to learn to find peace within ourselves and to not look for it without. I know, Raj, you and I sometimes have conversations about this offline, about, you know, like, what would it be like to live in the woods? You know, when, you know, to have a simple life. And what does a simple life really mean? Because what we're talking about sometimes when we're doing that is really just we want to feel a greater sense of peace. And sometimes we find it hard to have that sense of peace when we're taking care of all of these other things, you know, that are outside of ourselves, many of which we have no control over.
Yeah, you know, as you were talking, something just struck me, Perletta, is, you know, is it our expectation that somehow we can make our world just, you know, so that it's not murky and muddy? I think maybe that's what it is. That's why we're on this hamster wheel day in and day out, trying to make it so that it won't be murky. And the world will always be murky, okay? You can create a mansion. You can create whatever. You can create, you know, you can become a billionaire. You can go live in the woods. It's still going to be murky. And we have to blossom within that. So I think our expectation, maybe that's what has us trying so hard. But anyway, that's just the thought. But what you're talking about, I want to just, talk about that a little bit. You know, exactly what our spirituality points to is it points to our being before it got identified with certain roles. In other words, it is pointing to our original self, our unassociated being, before we got associated with this and that and that and that. since this being is free from the objects of our perception. Because whatever we surround ourselves with, these are, you know, this is what's within our perception, right? Once we recognize our true nature, our true beingness, then all of this internal noise, the duality, the fears, the anxiety, just the drifting, it just is going to fall away. And it's going to be replaced by peace and spaciousness and joy and silence.
Mm.
So when we give up this expectation of trying to create this world, which we then get immersed in, we can say that, yes, this world will always be suffering and it'll always be murky and it'll always be muddy, no matter how beautiful it looks to begin with. So.
Mm. Well, and I think you said it quite beautifully when you talked about getting to who we are. It's like the naturalness, right? We cover that up with a whole host of things. We've talked about our personalities and our egos, our wants and desires. And that's under all of it, there's a naturalness that we each have, the essence of who we are. And when we connect to that, and that's a part of what our faith, our spiritual path helps us to do. It helps us to get rid of those layers so that we can really connect with our naturalness. Without all of that. And when we're able to do that, we're able to really be peaceful, right? So this idea of cultivating a relationship with yourself, understanding what you believe and allowing it to help inform you and transform your experience is what we're talking about, right? And it's not necessarily easy to do. I know it's a path. That's one of the why they call it spiritual path, because it's a walk. Right, the walk of transformation, of shedding yourself, of identifying with, you know, the watch you have on, the bag that you wear, the shoes that you have on, the house that you live in. You know, it's like the starter house and then the bigger house. And it's like all of these social structures are built up to help keep us focused out here. And there's nothing wrong with that. And you're not going to find joy and peace out there. It'll be temporary if it's found. You know, I know every time I moved up to a bigger house, I felt great about it. I loved it while I was decorating. And, you know, and then once I got it fulfilled, then I kept wanting to tweak this or that, you know, because I was looking for this, like, sense of I made it or I've got it. And I never found that. And so this idea for me, at least, in my own journey of, oh, okay, I'm looking for this greater sense of satisfaction. It's not there, so let me find it. And the more I've walked the path of understanding and knowing myself, getting to a sense of my own naturalness, understanding what brings me joy, what is it that makes me happy, little simple things that we've talked about before, but we're going to just mention some things now. You know, just being in nature, singing, people use prayer, meditation, a number of those things really help us to unwind from the world and focus more on our own heart space, not just being present to it, but acknowledging and accepting and being aware of who we are from a very basic standpoint. That's the part of what the spiritual journey is that allows us to move in the world and to not necessarily be focused on the conditioned state of our surroundings.
Well, I'm so glad you said the word awareness, because if you think about it, you know, it's your state of awareness that creates the problem. It's your state of awareness that finds a solution, and it's your state of awareness that gets to a place where there is no problem. Mm. So if you imagine that, Deepak Chopra explains it beautifully. He says, imagine yourself in a dark room with only a small candle. And there's lots of furniture. So you look at the furniture as obstacles in this room. Well, you're just going to stumble because there's limited awareness, limited light. Now imagine that you have a flashlight. And now you can see that there's a sofa and there's a chair, TV, stereo. Now you have many choices. And what were once obstacles now become opportunities. And if we go a step further and let's imagine the whole room is just from ceiling to floor is made of transparent glass windows, and let's say you're suspended in space, now everywhere you look, you are in awareness of the unbounded. So there are no problems at this point. There's just awareness. So as we remain unattached to the worldly matter, we deepen our experience of all there is to have, do, and be.
Right. So what matters isn't the specific path that you take, but the attention and intention you put toward walking your path. Thank you for joining us today on Living Life Powerfully. Next week, we're going to talk about depression. Raj is going to lead us in the discussion from dark to light, coping with depression. Between now and then, if you'd like to reach us, please feel free to email us at pearlrajradio@gmail.com. And remember to live your life powerfully.
So long.